I wanna go where the moon shines bright. I wanna dance under the stars tonight.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the moon. I am your host for this evening, Lawrence Ray. And today I am joined by my esteemed co-host, Ricardo Martinez.
Hello, Lawrence. How are you?
I am wonderful today. Thank you very much. And we are missing our other co-host, Jerry. But fear not. We have the true master behind Bit Refill, the guy who actually runs the place with us today on this podcast. He's not going to say anything, but if you're watching on YouTube, you will see him in the background. Kryptonaut has come in to just check that we're all above board. Are you feeling the fear, Ricardo?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, even Sergey takes orders from the Kryptonaut, so I'm walking on eggshells today.
Yeah. but yeah, I guess, well, what we'll do today, I mean, we've got quite a lot going on news-wise. So today we've got Ray Dalio, who has something to say about crypto, and social networks are rebelling against big tech. And there's a lot more to come. So make sure you stick around to hear the news. Now, first, I believe you wanted to discuss quite a pressing matter this week, Ricardo, which was to do with social networks. So please take it away and let the guests know what's going on.
Okay, sure. The New York Times is reporting that social media networks are rebelling against big tech censorship from the Silicon Valley oligarchs that run social media platforms. By using decentralized social media platforms that are kind of copying the design of Bitcoin in the sense that, for example, on the Fediverse, like Mastodon, people run their own servers and those servers federate with other servers that other people on the network are hosting so that the network is more decentralized. There's no single authority that can shut you down for posting something that's unpopular or controversial. How do you feel about that, Lawrence?
Well, I mean, I reckon you're going to know already how I feel about it. I'm pretty for that in every possible sense of the word. I am not the greatest fan of Facebook, I will admit. I only have a Facebook account for two reasons. One, to just keep up with family, and the other is so that my Oculus works, because I don't know how much you know about that, but obviously if you've got a VR headset, if it's an Oculus, you have to have a real Facebook account in order to keep using your Oculus, otherwise it becomes a paperweight, which annoyed me quite a lot in the first place. So yeah, I mean, moving on to this, sort of the idea of social networks, did you see about Twitter and how there was this sort of leaked phrase or memo from one of the guys at Twitter, I think it was Jack Dorsey, about Donald Trump being banned and them sort of like intending to continue doing these bans and sort of essentially directing and telling you what you should be hearing. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, actually, this article mentions it. And they're talking about how Jack Dorsey has a social network plan that he's also trying to do, like a decentralized version of Twitter, which will allow for more freedom and not as much censorship. But, you know, coming from Jack Dorsey and the track record of Twitter being one of the most censorship prone platforms, I'm not too optimistic about that. I'm more optimistic about platforms like Libre, Mastodon, Pleroma, PeerTube, like true decentralized federated social media. Do you think that the Twitter decentralized social media is still going to have the same level of censorship, or do you feel that it will be more of a open platform?
Yeah, that's a good question, because there clearly needs to be some form of censorship to a degree. I'm very much a libertarian, but there's obviously going to be things that you really don't want anyone spreading or doing on social media, or any like sort of children coming across that are like quite, you know, horrible. So there's always going to be that kind of fringe 1% of stuff that I do think should be censored or should be prevented from being seen by audiences. Now, obviously, I personally think that's a very minimal amount of things, because I'm very pro people do what they want, say what they want, as long as it's not sort of, you know, properly directly harming someone. So I figure that with these decentralized social medias, one way that they could could do this, and I don't know quite how it would work sort of perfectly, but I guess like with how DEXs can do customer support. So every time people, customers or users sort of send payments maybe to each other, if that's going to be part of the social media in the future, then like a small portion of that would be scraped out and would go to like paying like customer support, well, customer support people, moderators, basically, essentially. But then the problem you're going to have there is that there needs to be like a guide, community decided upon guide of like what we say is not okay on this platform, and everything else goes, basically. So do you see where I'm coming from? I think there needs to be like a sort of the whole community would need to decide upon what should be censored. Then it would need to sort of appoint people to do that job, and obviously the whole community would pay them, like, I guess, in a way, it's not quite how miners would get paid by the Bitcoin network participants.
I understand exactly what you're saying, but I totally disagree. Free speech, in order for it to be free, means no censorship. I like how you touched upon moderation, and I agree with moderation. The way the Fediverse is set up, we're talking about platforms like Mastodon or PeerTube. It's opt-in moderation. So whoever runs the server for that instance gets to choose what the rules are. And people that join that that particular server have to abide by those rules. And if they don't, they can get the boot. But since it's like a case-by-case set of rules, you know, each instance has their own set of rules, this does provide the freedom for, if you think like I do, that free speech shouldn't be censored at all. There are those kind of instances where there's no moderation, no censorship at all. You know, they're adult oriented, so you got to keep that in mind. But there's also, you know, instances that are more family oriented or, you know, have a set of rules that the community has decided upon that do exclude, you know, unpopular content amongst that subset of users. So I do agree with moderation, like, and I do agree for like mainstream adoption, the most popular instances are probably going to be, you know, moderated pretty strictly. But the great thing about Federation is that you have the option to have 100%, you know, uncensored speech if you like.
Gotcha. I guess, yeah, I mean, I can see where you're coming from. I think I kind of agree with you, like to the 99.9% level. I guess what I'm trying to get at is that for me, I agree with free speech. Well, I agree with, let's be honest, I agree with free speech, quite frankly. It's more the idea of content that is like a whole sort of deep web, dark web kind of level that I'm trying to get at, that I think there's some of that stuff that really just shouldn't like be anywhere, because it's clearly, like, if, for example, if someone's being harmed or whatever, very clearly in against their will, that kind of thing, like, you know, that's the kind of thing I'd want to make sure doesn't really turn up anywhere on the platform I'm using. But basically that would be about it, and I'd agree that like having communities that are adult based or family based and having their own choice of what they decide to moderate, that's a great idea. And I mean, it, realistically, I ideally would love 100% zero censorship social media. I just always worry about there's always that 0.0001% of people. So yeah, I mean, I've never used Mastodon. I've heard of the different platforms. I went about 2 years ago, I was trying to use some and just found them to be pretty clunky and difficult at that time. But I know they've come a long way. And I'm a fan of Peepeth, which is like a Ethereum-based one, which I just think is like really fun and like pretty friendly community, to be honest. And everything you do gets sort of immortalized onto the blockchain and signed off. And so, yeah, I'm a fan of that. And it's also like works with your MetaMask, and you can like tip people and stuff like that. So, yeah, I do quite like the idea, and I want to see that move forward for sure, definitely.
That's one thing that the Fediverse is missing. They don't have any integration with like Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency to where you can tip people or send tokens or anything like that. Like you do see on some of these blockchain social media platforms like Libre. So there's room for improvement there. I'm sure somebody at some point will figure out a way to add that dynamic.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, yeah, I'd say what I'll do then before next week's podcast, we both have homework here. One of us can basically research. So you can research Peepeth and have a look at it, and I can research and have a look at Mastodon. How about that? We'll see what we like about both of them and how they could kind of take different parts from each other. That would be good.
Yeah, sounds good. Should we move on to the next story?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got one for you, and then obviously you can come back at me with another one. But okay. This one is nothing crazy, but I just thought it was quite sort of good fun and just an interesting thing for people to maybe realize is. I saw an article from Bloomberg, and it was talking about Bitcoin mining and obviously different areas where they do it. And actually, Bitcoin mining. Well, the title is Bitcoin Mining Comes to the Arctic Circle. So, what was interesting to me is. Essentially how far and where people can put up like crypto mining farms and where they can do this. And so there's a new one, there's a Russian owned one called BitCluster that's expanded. And if you see the pictures, and obviously we'll put links, you can see the pictures of, and it just looks kind of amazing really to see like the Bitcoin logo in this ice cold terrain. And it's, I think it's one of the biggest Bitcoin mining farms with some of the cheapest electricity in the world. The main thing for this is really to see it. It kind of just looks amazing. You've got sort of like minus 10 degrees Celsius out there, and it's just like almost beautiful to see these like these buildings set up with Bitcoin mining rigs with this kind of like ice cold terrain around it. But I suppose the discussion point there is really that, like, hey, let's be honest, you know, go back to 2009, 2010, 2011, do you think the early adopters would have imagined, you know, that you've got cryptocurrency mining, Bitcoin mining, more specifically, in pretty much every continent now, really, of the globe?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. And also one of the most extreme climates on the entire planet, you know, in Arctic temperatures, I'm sure mining isn't easy to accomplish. Do you know how they're doing it? Are they using like geothermal energy or like from petroleum drilling, or how exactly are they mining in the
Arctic? Yeah. Well, so this is the thing. I kind of tried to find a little bit more information about it, and it looks like essentially, it looks like they essentially had this, like this big data center in the first place, and they then kind of tried to convert it into this mining rig. And I know Bloomberg here doesn't have a huge amount of information about it, but essentially, where is it? They've got here, because they've got here essentially a large power unit, and it looks like, where are we? It's a Stalin era nickel plant that was closed and then was reopened. And essentially, it's a large power unit that then can supply the Bitcoin mining facility with, like, I think it's the cheapest electricity in the world, in the coldest, one of the coldest areas in the world. And so what they're doing is, well, I assume they don't have to worry about overheating of the mining rigs. Let's be realistic. But I don't know. No, it doesn't give any super specifics on how they actually run this. Here we are. It's got here, even with average annual temperatures at minus 10 degrees Celsius, the BitCluster facility still needs ventilation and air circulation to cool the machine. So yeah, it looks like they essentially are plugging these in. They've got the electricity from this nearby electricity farm. And it says here that the BitCluster's clients pay 0.04 cents per kilowatt hour, which is amongst the cheapest globally. So Norilsk's nickel power unit mostly uses gas or hydropower to produce the electricity as well. So it looks like they're getting it from natural gases. So it's pretty amazing what they're up to there.
Yeah, I'd say so. That's pretty inspirational.
What's your news piece, your next news piece for this week to discuss?
Well, this one's also mining related, which is, a great segue. It's about the Stratum version 2 mining software. There's like an upgrade. Matt Carallo, I believe, came out with an improvement to mining to make it more decentralized called BetterHash. And then since he came out with that, there's been improvements on it. The first version was called Stratum 1. And what it does is it allows the miners to join the pools, but they can, I guess, have more autonomy. They're not like forced to mine the blocks that the pool is feeding them. So it basically improves the situation. The big criticism about Bitcoin mining is that the mining pools are centralized. So mining's centralized and it's controlled. And these new protocols, Stratum version 2 in particular, go a long way to improve that situation and give the miners that are joining the pools more autonomy and I guess better rewards as well. Like, I think they get to keep the rewards from the blocks that they themselves mine. Before it was like the mining pools would accumulate the hash power from all the miners and then split the rewards based on as a whole, like how many blocks the mining pool together solved. And now I think the miners have a little bit better chance of solving the blocks themselves and receiving the payout themselves. I'm not a miner, so I'm not 100% sure on the details, but this new protocol is going to make mining more efficient. It's going to make it more profitable and more decentralized. And it's a huge blow to that criticism that mining pools control Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I suppose one of the concerns for myself has always been that, like, that whilst when people criticize that that the mining is almost like a centralized sort of part of it, I suppose it's not like a lie necessarily, but it's definitely not correct. But there is elements of truth to it, I suppose. So you've got like different mining groups in the past have actually like split up because they were getting too big and then were therefore kind of almost risking the... So I suppose it is definitely a risk, and there is definitely an element of centralization the way it was done. So things like Stratum with their version 1 and then obviously now this version 2 upgrade appearing, I suppose that you're right in saying that that just kind of helps pull us away from the criticism that, you know, Bitcoin's a Chinese coin or any of these kind of different FUD sort of speculations that are out there. So yeah, I'd say this kind of thing is definitely welcome. I suppose one of my own criticisms of Bitcoin, if there's going to be any, has always been, I guess, my concern about mining and that, you know, not anyone can do it. And it is now like a sort of game that only a few can enter with sort of extremely good setups and a lot of investment. So yeah, I guess that kind of takes it away from the hobbyists a tiny bit. And that's always been something that's kind of annoyed me a tad. I guess it's more bitterness. I wish I got involved earlier. But yeah, this definitely is a welcome upgrade to me.
Yeah. In response to that, you still can buy like an ASIC miner, you know, and just run one for yourself. I mean, you're not going to get rich doing it, but if you wanted to support the network and, you know, mine what you can do it. It's not economically viable in every area. I'm sure in the UK where you're living, the electricity is a lot more expensive than it is here in South America. So there's that to consider. But yeah, an individual still can mine unless they have a lot of money to get in as like a major player. They're probably not going to be rich from it, but you can still mine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I, you know, I'm very much a pro Bitcoin guy here, but I suppose that's, you've got to try. I always try to have criticisms or try to have kind of drawbacks in my mind of everything really, if I can, so that I can see it from every side. And I suppose that's always been one thing that's kind of got me a little bit annoyed, was that kind of thing of, well, I wish I, you know, it's more like I wish I'd got involved back then and set up a mining rig myself, you know. It's more probably coming from bitterness, to be frankly honest. But yeah, that moves us on fairly smoothly to another piece of news, which is all to do with the our man, Mr. Ray Dalio. So he, obviously, you know who Ray Dalio is, I assume, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I guess for anyone out there listening, quite a successful, well-known, essentially fund, hedge fund owner, not owner, manager, that would be the right word. So he's, yeah, quite successful, written some successful books. I actually am quite a big fan of his, despite his constant dislike of cryptocurrency up until recently. So that is the news. This week, he has seemed to sort of change his mind, because I remember only a few months ago hearing another piece of kind of anti-crypto FUD coming out of Ray Dalio, which I was kind of a bit saddened about, but I just kind of brushed it aside. But he has now said in a column on Bridgewater Daily Observations, which is his firm's daily newsletter, said that, "I believe Bitcoin is one hell of an invention," quote, and also saying that Bitcoin won't escape our scrutiny, which is quite heavy praise coming from a man like Ray Dalio. I mean, there's a lot of people who've changed their mind over time. We've all seen the memes of the newspapers and the funds that have kind of sort of first off like said, "No, it's nothing," and then they've said, "Oh, it's dangerous," and then they kind of just cry about it, and then they join in and they kind of start buying Bitcoin. So I guess with this side of things, it's very much a sign of things to come, with more and more and more institutions and high up people becoming involved in Bitcoin and purchasing Bitcoin. Do you think that this kind of attitude will spread also so as well as being positive for Bitcoin, will spread on to other coins like Ethereum or Polkadot and other like altcoins. Well, what's your thoughts on this? Like, do you see that happening, or do you think it's kind of going to be stuck with Bitcoin mainly being the big boy coming out of these institution buyers?
Yeah, I think Bitcoin's going to be the one that captures the attention of the institutions. There's already hedge funds that have invested in altcoins and stuff, but Bitcoin has the network effect. Bitcoin has the infrastructure built out around it. Bitcoin has the most adoption. It's kind of like when the internet was developed and they had OSI, and then that was like a private, like, altcoin version of the internet protocol. And then TCP/IP came out and it was open source. And even though all the investment was in the other protocol, the open source protocol won out because anybody could just build on it. I think Bitcoin is going to follow the same kind of trajectory. What's interesting to me is, since Ray Dalio reversed his position on Bitcoin, it kind of makes me wonder what point of the stages of grief that Andreas Antonopoulos lined out for banks in regards to Bitcoin, like, which stage is Dalio at right now, would you say?
Yeah, I won't lie and say I know the stages off by heart, but I've seen the stages of grief being posted everywhere quite a few times, so I know what you're getting at. I would say, well, he's definitely, because obviously about, I'd say, a few months ago, he came out with that kind of very much like a kind of, first is that, I think, is it first is the denial, then there's the kind of, isn't there the sort of upset kind of side of things? And I think he kind of sounded a little bit, not putting, you know, words into his mouth by any means, or being an expert on the way he's talking, but he sounded a bit more in that kind of upset area. So I think now it's kind of come to that sort of point where he's kind of gone, finally, oh, if, you know, okay, if you can't beat them, we'll bloody join them kind of thing. I think we've finally hit that point. And hey, like, he's not said guaranteed that his firm will be investing in Bitcoin at all yet, but I think he's kind of at the turning point where he's saying, okay, look, here, it's a good invention. Yes, we're going to have to take a look at this. I think it's become, I think a lot of people like him and other institutions are kind of going to reluctantly get involved, because their different shareholders and members of their funds are going to start pushing for it, quite frankly, with all the news that's going on.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
I suppose in contrast to your point, I would say that I agree that Bitcoin, clearly for the, at least the next, what, I don't know, 5 to 10 years maybe, is clearly going to be on top, or at least I think most likely that would be the case. Who knows? But I also can see, maybe not like a lot of different altcoins, but I would see maybe Ethereum gaining like a fair bit of like plus sides with it, and quite a few more institutions getting involved, because with, for example, the US government, you have like Ethereum and Bitcoin have both basically been nigh on confirmed that they're not securities, but not much else has, other than I think Kick's token, because they went through that lawsuit. So I suppose that kind of helps Ethereum. And I think maybe institutions will kind of see Bitcoin and think, maybe it's, you know, too heavily invested in already. What's, you know, what am I going to go for that's like the second best option? And then they may go into Ethereum. But I suppose the benefit that Bitcoin has that most other projects don't have is that there is no one to sue. It's pretty straightforward. There isn't anyone to sue. So with Ethereum, whilst Vitalik isn't necessarily like the owner or anything like that, people can kind of at least try and go after him or any of the other people. But who are you going to go after for Bitcoin? I mean, Satoshi... Yeah. Is who? We don't know. Is it one person, millions of people? Who knows? But so I think that's definitely a big pro that Bitcoin has going for it, and I think that these investors are starting to wise up to that now, to be honest.
Yeah. Now, that's an interesting point that you make, because most of the efforts to regulate Bitcoin have been based at the companies springing up around Bitcoin, the on and off ramps, exchanges, things like that. So that shows that they really can't regulate the protocol itself, so they need to regulate the businesses that are taking advantage of the Bitcoin network.
Yeah, you're correct, and that's clearly what they're trying to do at the moment. Albeit, I don't know if you saw, but professional segue here, but FinCEN, I assume you and many of the listeners would have known about these proposed FinCEN like regulations and adjustments. So it was to do with a lot of it was to do with KYC, from removing your funds from an exchange into your own wallet, and so it was I've forgotten the exact, so apologies if I'm butchering this, but it was, I believe you'd have to have a sort of a wallet that had been KYC'd, so that like you could withdraw into that. And then if you wanted to, you could then withdraw from that KYC'd wallet into your own other wallet. So it was adding like another layer basically from withdrawing your funds from exchanges, which is quite frankly something I'm not for at all. Yeah, I saw that Joe Biden's administration had frozen this proposal and had given 60 days for industry players and others to comment on it. I suppose, what are you wanting to see from that? What are you wanting to see? Are you wanting to see them drop this entirely or just maybe alter their proposals?
Yeah, I think it's dumb. I would like to see them drop it entirely. I don't think it's enforceable. Even if you make like every wallet app have like a KYC variant, people are still going to be able to coin join with Schnorr signatures. People are going to be able to do smart contracts on Bitcoin with Taproot also. Like, it's going to improve upon that. So like, there's going to be a, you know, new types of transactions taking place where a whole bunch of public signatures are merged into one, and then it's programmed to, you know, send money to a bunch of different places through a bunch of different program transactions. You know, we're talking about smart contracts on Bitcoin now. I don't think it's going to be enforceable.
Yeah, and to me, the regulation kind of almost felt like this kind of attempt from them to say, well, we don't really understand this that well yet. We're getting there. You know, this is going too quickly. The market's pumping. People are getting involved that we didn't necessarily want to get involved. Slow down. Like, we're going to just do this to like slow you all down a bit. That's how it feels to me. I mean, to me, they often use this constant mention of crime with Bitcoin and crime with cryptocurrency that's increasing apparently year upon year, which I'm sure it is. But crime increased year upon year with the US dollar and with the pound and with every currency in the world, which has been used. So I always find that the Bitcoin gets linked to crime in this negative way in the media. But I mean, you can, it's almost like, you know, you can have crime with any currency. It's just the currency someone's almost choosing to do the crime with. So if anything, it's almost like a compliment to Bitcoin to say that it's actually the most valuable or most useful currency for someone to hold, and that you'd want to sort of do criminal activities with it. But not saying I'm condoning that, but I find it very strange that, and I think that really what's happening is they're just kind of using crime as an excuse to just say, hold up, we need to like get a rein on this asset class and make sure that, you know, essentially it's not going to make people tons and tons of money and lose people tons and tons of money and get everyone upset. That's what it feels like to me, quite frankly, here.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it feels like they don't want it to destabilize the current system that they have. Bitcoin's a better money than inflationary fiat money, so they're going to have to come to terms with that somehow. I don't know how they're going to do it. As far as Bitcoin being linked to crime, one of the best barometers to how good Bitcoin is as a currency is its usage on the dark nets. Regardless of how you feel about, you know, the existence of darknets and what's taking place on them, the fact that people are actually using Bitcoin and preferring it over privacy coins, even though privacy coins have been around for a long time, shows not only Bitcoin's network effect, but the fact that the protocol works. It is providing censorship-resistant transactions to people, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the final point before we sort of look to head off would be kind of on this point as well. I often hear these news articles, and I think I saw one this week actually, about sort of banks and governments, etc. All look at, sort of, I think they use the term looking or investigating CBDCs like central bank, and it's like, there's no way these people are sort of casually investigating, like, no matter how you say it, casually investigating. They are panicking and desperately sort of trying their best to be the next when it comes to creating their own CBDC or even their own cryptocurrency. For example, China is light years seemingly ahead of every other country with their own digital yuan. Yeah, I can never say it correctly. So, yeah, I think really what you're seeing here is a market that's exploding and sort of building and growing extremely quickly for various reasons, partly because of the coronavirus pandemic. I mean, it's shown to people that, you know, there is value in something that you can't tangibly hold, which was a big criticism for years from people who don't understand cryptocurrencies. So yeah, I think that, yeah, those are all very interesting points, but ideally I think you've got a government that's just, governments around the world that are just desperately scrabbling to catch up with people power, basically.
When do you think we'll see the first like major Western government, like the US or the UK or one of the EU nations, really adopt like a CBDC? Like how soon do you see this happening?
Yeah, it's difficult because I think a lot of the time the UK, US, EU, these like Western sort of areas and countries usually have so much regulation and stuff that just bogs them down that countries like China or lots of other countries don't have as much of. I mean, it's kind of that thing with, ironically, I mean, China put up that that hospital for COVID at the very beginning, which housed so many people like within a week or something, and the UK took a long time to put up these hospitals that weren't even really that fit for purpose. So you've got governments that are more streamlined with the less freedom they offer as well, I suppose, in the terms of China. Maybe it's very tough because I suppose there's always that chance they could kind of panic and really just try their very best to just kill blockchain and crypto entirely. Then that is entirely possible they could try to do that. But if they don't, I would think three or so. I'd say 2024, 2025, I reckon you'd start to see something actually really come out as like the choice from a Western government. What about you? What's your thoughts on that? What's your prediction?
It's hard to say because I know they're working on it. You know, a bunch of different countries have talked about how they're, you know, doing experiments with regulatory sandboxes for interbank payments with cryptocurrencies. Central banks have announced that they're investigating CBDCs, like you said. There's, you know, the dollar's almost 100% digital anyways. You know, cash is the only a small percentage of the dollars that exist. So I could see them making a switch. Like if there's motivation to do it, you know, from the leadership, from the Congress and the president and stuff, I could see them making a switch quickly if they, you know, all of a sudden decided that was the direction they're going to take and everybody needed to get on board. Like it could happen quickly. It's hard to say. I would say probably 2 years, 3 years, maybe.
Yeah, some similar thoughts. Yeah, and obviously the thing here is that, you know, whenever it does happen, we will be here to report it to you, okay, listeners out there. that's a guarantee. But yeah, I suppose the next thing to move on to now, as we sort of look to close, is the positive news. So we will give you maximum 60 seconds, or approximately, actually, I should probably say, 60 seconds of positive news. Any kind of news that's just good and cheery to help you start or end your week on a positive note. Nothing has to be crypto related here. So I will begin. A cat which was thought to be dead in California mudslides has appeared alive 3 years later. Iran has passed a new bill protecting women from domestic violence. A pastor whose bike was stolen has in return now created a free bicycle repair service for all the people in need. Germany has used more renewable energy in 2020 than fossil fuels for the first time ever. An 108-year-old Wisconsin woman has beaten COVID in time for her 109th birthday. And a man who wrongfully served 26 years on death row has now been exonerated and is free. A man named Chen Si spends every weekend at Nanjing Yangtze Bridge and saves people from jumping. This week, he has got his tally of people saved up to 321 to date. And finally, volunteers have removed nearly 10,000 pounds of trash from the Tennessee River. So that was your positive news to end the pod on today. Ricardo, is there any sort of final messages you'd like to give to the listeners at all?
No, not really.
Very much keeping it casual. I like it. Well, if you'd like to get in touch with us or have any comments, please go ahead and follow us on Twitter. At the Moon Podcast is what we are on Twitter. I think I said at the Moon Pod last week, which was a mistake. So sorry for that. At the Moon Podcast. And yeah, feel free to send us any questions, queries, suggestions. We'll be happy to discuss them and we'll be happy to get back to you as well and hear that you're listening. So thank you very much for taking the time to listen to us ramble this week. Much appreciated. We will be back next week with the next installment of To The Moon Podcast. Remember to stay happy, stay positive, and buy Bitcoin.